You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right, it's true. I can't handle the truth. Friends and family are losing their jobs and their self-respect. Even German billionaires are throwing themselves under the trains.
This is the Radio Eco Shock Show with Alex Smith.
It used to be so easy here out on the edge. Nobody took the truth seriously. Economic doomsayers were just nuts then. Now, well, they dominate primetime TV. Hello, Green 960 listeners. In just a few minutes, our special guest will be Joseph Rome, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. During the Clinton administration, Mr. Rome was acting assistant secretary of energy, responsible for energy efficiency and renewables. We'll get the latest on both science and climate-friendly appointments by Barack Obama. First, I want to get you a bit of news that gets buried. Here's a surprise. Carbon emissions to the atmosphere are still going up. Last summer, Kevin Anderson from the Tyndall Center told a stunned conference that carbon dioxide emissions were rising faster than anybody predicted or feared. He thought it improbable that levels could be kept to 650 parts per million, the doomsday scenario. That means at least a 4 degree centigrade rise average, and likely the tipping point at which ancient climate shifting mechanisms take over. I'll get back to all that in a minute. Governments are doing absolutely nothing about it. Two European groups, German Watch and Climate Action Europe, have measured the Climate Change Performance Index. It shows which countries are actually trying to save the climate. Sweden, Germany, and France are top in the ranks, while the U.S. comes in 58th. U.S. emissions are up 20% since 1992. Canada's are up more than 26%. Canada is the 59th worst performing country, second only to Saudi Arabia at 60th. On the positive side, some OPEC countries are cutting oil production, trying to get prices back up. But the drop isn't enough to stop spiraling carbon emissions. Still, Goldman Sachs analysts say the low price of oil may halt development on expensive sources like Brazil's Tupi, billed as the largest oil find in the Americas since 1976. Also endangered are other deepwater drilling projects around the world, including one off Angola. Development of Canada's oil sands is also slowing, but not stopped. The Norwegian companies Statoil Hydro and Royal Dutch Shell have put off investments in Canada's tar sands. Aw, too bad. There's a lot of debate about the cooler weather in the Northern Hemisphere this year. Climate deniers say, well, that's it, it's the coming ice age. I just saw Lou Dobbs on the infamous CNN looking very wise. As he explained, the melting glaciers around the world are not from us, but from sunspot activity, a theory long ago thrown out by scientists who investigated it thoroughly. Television loves the car ads so much, they'll spit out anything. To show the depth of interdependence of television and auto advertising, here is a clip from a press conference given by the National Auto Dealers Association.
Chrysler President Jim Press reminding local television reporters even their jobs are at risk if Congress doesn't okay this multi-billion dollar bridge loan.
Who'd buy the advertising for you to be standing here taking pictures? The auto industry is the majority buyer of advertising in America, the capillaries in the economy worldwide.
Get it? If the big three go bankrupt and the Asian companies can't afford to advertise, commercial television networks may disappear. What a shame that would be. Think of the propaganda we'd miss. Oh, wait, the government would nationalize TV too. Knock out the middleman, those wise corporate heads like Rupert Murdoch, and, well, get your government pablum directly. Although non-commercial stations worked out sort of okay in the UK, Canada, and other countries, it's not the end. At least you don't get 10 minutes of commercials every half hour. Back to the winter storms. We don't really know what caused this burst. It is compatible with scientific predictions in one way. The appearance of extreme precipitation events can appear as rain, or if the temperature is cold enough, as snow. It's happening now. Most of the media is blaming the storms on the appearance of the Pacific Ocean cooling phenomenon known as La Niña. Last April, NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab rats announced that the Pacific has entered a 10-year cool phase after 29 years of warmer currents. The ocean has oscillated between those states for a very, very long time. The combination of La Niña with warmer currents in the Atlantic may lead to drying in parts of the South America and the American Southwest, but more rain and flooding in the Pacific. Planting in Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines could be affected. Weather instability may add to growing world hunger. Our friend on Climateer Investor Blog says, folks, maybe we should start thinking about rebuilding our grain reserves. My thoughts, exactly. Despite the snowstorms in North America and Europe, 2008 ended up in the top 10 warmest years, according to various climate centers. Remember, we are talking about the global average temperature, which includes the other hemisphere we so seldom hear about. Even here in Vancouver, we had one of the warmest Novembers on record. 2008 is likely one-tenth of a degree cooler than last year. Back when Bill Clinton was inaugurated, the 2008 average of 57.9 degrees would have been the warmest year on record. That shows you how far we've come.
Our duty to the human race is clear.
A growing chorus of scientists think it is already too late to save the climate as we know it. Unless humans take over management of the atmosphere, that is geoengineering, my friends. One of the biggest worries, the Earth's covering of ice is disappearing. You have seen the comparison photos of various glaciers all around the world retreating or disappearing altogether. Even Glacier National Park may have no glaciers in just a few years. It's amazing. But now a NASA satellite can measure the loss of ice in places like Greenland and the Antarctic. The GRACE satellite is actually a pair of instruments which can determine changes in the mass below. As reported by rawstory.com, the latest data shows, quote, over 2 trillion tons of ice has melted since 2003. That's the headline to Google. The Environment News Network has the story as well. NASA geophysicist Scott Luthke told them, more than half of the loss of landlocked ice in the past 5 years has occurred in Greenland, based on measurements of ice weight by NASA's GRACE satellite. There have been many signs that Greenland is melting, instant lakes on top in summer, rumblings the size of earthquakes. Now we know for sure. The world's largest supply of ice on land is melting fast. It guarantees the sea level will rise, going way up, endangering major cities and crop deltas. There is a whirlwind of new climate news. To help sort it out, our guest is Joseph Rome, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. During the Clinton administration, Mr. Rome was acting Assistant Secretary of Energy, responsible for energy efficiency and renewable energy. Welcome, Joe.
Howdy.
Well, your blog has so many stunning headlines. I'd like to just, maybe we could start with the new science coming from the American Geophysical Union and the Hadley Center, and then get into America's response and the new Obama administration. So I understand you were at the latest Geophysical Union conference. What's the news from there?
Well, I actually had someone reporting live from there.
Okay.
And every year the top geophysicists and climate scientists report their latest research. And they did so last week. And the basic story is that everything is melting a lot faster than people thought. Antarctica is warming and melting. Greenland and Antarctica and the glaciers have lost 2 trillion tons of ice since 2003. The Arctic is warming faster than people thought. The tundra is melting, releasing methane. So the news is the global warming is, I'm afraid, happening faster than people had feared.
I noticed, too, on your blog that the British seem to be ahead of American climate projections sometimes. I noticed the UK Tyndall Centre report and then the Hadley Centre. You had some graphs for your December 21st entry in climateprogress.org, your blog. And it kind of scared me. What's your reaction to this new information?
Yeah, the Hadley Center, which is run out of the Met Office, which is actually part of the Defense Department in Britain, is one of the most credible organizations in the world reporting on tracking climate and projecting climate. And, they put out this figure, which is definitely quite alarming, that, we face really what I would say is 10 degrees Fahrenheit planetary warming by the end of the century unless we get off of our current greenhouse gas emissions path pretty soon. And, some people have been saying similar things like that. In fact, on my blog, I have been, putting the case together myself. But this is the first time really that a super credible organization has said this, because 5.5 degrees centigrade or 10 degrees Fahrenheit would be a catastrophe. That is actually as much warming as the planet has seen since the last ice age, when half the planet was covered with ice. And if we had that much warming, it would eventually eliminate, melt all the ice on the Earth now, and that means ultimately, you know, sea levels a couple hundred feet higher than they are now. So, you know, I think we can't, you know, we can't risk going to an ice-free planet. The impacts are you know, catastrophic.
Well, we get to James Lovelock's vision where there's a few breeding pairs of humans left up near the Arctic, where the rainforests are growing around the Arctic. We don't want that kind of planet.
Yeah, I mean, Lovelock is you know, he makes me look optimistic. And, you know, his is a particularly, you know, grim vision. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I think it is safe to say that nobody has any idea of just all the bad things that would happen if we warm the planet that much. I mean, there are models from the Hadley Center that one-third of the planet would turn into a desert. There's actually a paper that was published in Science magazine which said that the entire southwest of the United States from Texas to California would turn into basically a permanent desert, a region more arid than the Oklahoma during the Dust Bowls. So, you know, again, I think it's important that people understand what the impacts are, what we would be doing to our children and grandchildren and the next 50 generations if we don't act. But I one of the main points of climate progress is to lay out the technologies and strategies that exist today that can allow us to avoid that catastrophe. And I don't want to leave anyone with the impression that it's easy to do. It would take a lot of money, but we're a very rich planet. So, you know, even 1-2% of our wealth is $1-2 trillion, you know, so a year. So the bottom line is that compared to what happens if we don't take action, the cost of you know, transforming to a green, clean energy economy is really very small.
Well, the other thing that came to me in that Hadley Center report was that it looks like if we can act quickly, that will make a huge difference, as opposed to figuring, well, what will we do by 2050? Is that your take as well?
Oh, yeah. I think it's very important for people to understand that even though most of the worst impacts are in the second half of this century, what we do in the next decade will pretty much determine what path we go on. Yeah, that's because the energy infrastructure takes so long to change. I mean, cars last 20 years, and coal plants last 50 years, and buildings last 80 years. And it's also in part because carbon dioxide lasts a really long time. I mean, the mean lifetime of carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels in the atmosphere is 10 to 20,000 years. So you have to reverse course now and dramatically reduce emissions over the next 3 or 4 decades if you want to get on to a path that is considered to be much safer. Total warming, hopefully, of around 2 degrees centigrade, 3 to 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That is a path that that most of the scientific community has said we need to get on.
And to get there, James Hansen's suggesting we may even have to start removing CO2 from the atmosphere.
Yeah, Hansen, who is a man that I respect more than just about any climate scientist in the world, and he has been right on this subject for 3 decades now, longer than almost anybody. He believes we actually have to reduce emissions more than a lot of other scientists, and that we're going to have to basically replace every coal plant on the planet within by 2030, and may ultimately need to pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Yes.
Well, I'm a little more radical than that even. I think that we're going to have to start shutting down coal plants and people will have to use less electricity, we'll have to put in solar, we'll have to do whatever we have to do. But I'm surprised that young people aren't around protesting coal mining and the coal power plants. Greenpeace does it occasionally, but there isn't much public movement on this yet, as far as I can see.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a little surprising to me that, I mean, if people understood the facts about climate change and the, you know, they would be marching in the streets. I think you're going to see over the next, you know, you're going to see more activism. I also think the good news is that as Barack Obama has appointed a cabinet that really understands both climate science and clean energy solutions. And he is going to reverse 8 years of total inaction and denial.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith right here on Green 960 AM San Francisco. We're talking climate with Joseph Rome of climateprogress.org. Well, can you tell us about some of his appointments? I mean, I'm certainly impressed with John Holdren, for example. There's a man I think we can trust there, but tell us more about the other appointments and John, if you like.
Yeah, John Holdren was named named to be science advisor, and he is a past president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He is a friend of mine. I considered him to be among the most qualified people that could possibly be appointed to the job. He is an expert both on climate science and clean energy, and he is not going to pull any punches. His appointment means that we're not going to be muzzling scientists, and we're going to be telling the American people the truth. And I think the public deserves to hear the truth. I think I'm very excited. I worked as Secretary of Energy. I worked at the Department of Energy for 5 years, and it is the agency whose job is to develop and deploy the clean energy technologies in the federal government. And the Obama picked the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Stephen Chu, who is very knowledgeable about climate, and he is an expert on clean energy and particularly energy efficiency, which often gets neglected in discussions where people focus too much on supply options. And, you know, he is a first-rate choice. But, you know, even Hillary Clinton, for Secretary of State is in charge of international negotiations, and Hillary is a strong believer in climate science and clean energy, and she ran on a very strong energy and climate platform. And Secretary of Commerce, Bill Richardson, normally Secretary of Commerce goes to kind of a Chamber of Commerce type, not somebody who's very enlightened on the energy and environmental matters. But obviously Bill Richardson was Secretary of Energy when I was there, and he is a leader in clean energy. So, yeah, I mean, and Carol Browner has been, you know, EPA administrator during the entire Clinton administration, the longest-serving EPA administrator, someone I know pretty well. She, very strong believer in action on global warming, and, you know, I expect her to be given this, she's been named for this unique new position where she's going to oversee from the White House climate action, and she's going to be kind of an energy and climate, they've said czar, but, you know, run an interagency council that will oversee everything. So I think that the whole team is the greenest, most scientifically informed cabinet that we've ever had.
Well, a couple of things worry me about the progress with the new administration. One is I've heard more about new road building, which feels to me the wrong direction, kind of a 1930s echo, but that isn't where we're at now. We need trains if we need anything. And I'm also wondering whether Mr. Paulson and Mr. Bush haven't really drained the Treasury so dry that there won't be the funding we need to make the big energy change. What are your thoughts there?
Well, you know, first, Obama has said that a large portion of the economic stimulus plan that he has announced is going to pass quickly after becoming president, will be green. It will focus on renewable energy, on energy efficiency, on energy infrastructure. So there'll be some road building and bridge building, but that is inevitable when you want to create an economic stimulus. You have to build, get money out that can be delivered quickly. But I think this is going to be the greenest economic stimulus program the country has ever seen. It will probably be $800 billion or more. And I think that, there's no question that that President Bush has, ruined the car, he's trashed the place, and Obama has got to clean up the mess. Will there be less money? I don't know. I think there's a recognition that we need to spend whatever we can to get out of this mess. But the cabinet appointments make it very clear that clean energy and climate action is going to be one of Obama's top priorities. There are simply too many people who have personally staked their reputations on talking about the seriousness of the climate problem and on the availability of clean technology now. So I don't think people should worry. I mean, you keep hearing this talk that he's appointed moderates and pragmatists. I tried to do a post on that. These guys are pragmatists. They're radical pragmatists. They're pragmatists in that they believe science and understand that science says, you know, as Obama says, we need to do, he said, I think science, the facts demand bold action. So, you can call them moderates or pragmatists if you want. That, in my mind, just means that they believe scientists and understand science and will do whatever it takes to preserve the health and well-being of this country and its next generation and the generation after that, which is precisely what we elected them for.
Well, as we wrap up, is there something else you want to tell our listeners? You have the floor.
Well, I think that I just urge people to become informed on this issue. I think that global warming and clean energy are going to be the issues that increasingly dominate all of our lives this century. And the next decade, we will engage more. But by the 2020s and the 2030s, every aspect of life in this country will be driven by an effort to prevent catastrophe. And, as Holdren likes to say, we have to work hard to avoid the things that we can't adapt to and adapt to the things that we can't avoid. And I think the public has taken a huge step by electing Barack Obama, but everybody is going to need to stay engaged on this issue.
Our guest has been Joseph Rohm, spelled R-O-M-M. He's the author of Hell and High Water, Global Warming, The Solution, The Politics, and What You Should Do. His blog is required reading, in my opinion, at climateprogress.org. Joe, it's been great having you on Radio EcoShop. I hope we can have you back again soon.
Anytime.
And that's it for Radio EcoShock this week. Find our website at ecoshock.org. Alex has left the building.
It's green, see? A green fix should last a long time.